Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that belt.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Got a tremendous show for you here on this hump day edition of RP3 and Company. If you'd like to give us a call, you know the number. Pick up the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We got a tremendous show lined up for you today. Only two guests, but they're two very good guests. In the third hour, Connor O'Gara, our good friend from Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com, giving us the latest on SEC football, scheduling, alcohol policy. We touch all the bases. He'll join us to start off the third hour today. The voice of the LSU Tigers, the one and only Chris Blair, will be joining us in the second hour, helping us preview a little bit of that LSU Florida State Super Regional that will be taking place this weekend at the Box. We'll dive into Houston Astros continuing their winning ways on that road trip with another win over the early April champions, the Seattle Mariners. Plus, much, much more. But let's start off with Major League Baseball draft again. As you heard in the two-minute drill, three more Tigers were selected yesterday. Current Tigers on the roster. The very first pick of the third round, which started at noon yesterday, was Zach Watson. Now remember, he was drafted last year, decided to come back. He was draft eligible last year. Came back, increased his draft stock. He can hit for power. But the real thing that the Major League Baseball clubs love about Zach Watson is that glove. And the fact that he can track down balls better than most in center field. And if you got a little bit of a pop to your bat, and you can make diving, leaping catches, and you can man the hardest part of the outfield, yeah, you got a future in the big leagues. So Zach Watson gets taken with the first pick in the third round. He's headed to Baltimore, play for the Orioles. Then we had to wait a little while. But both of LSU's, at times maligned, bullpen arms, immensely talented, but inconsistent. I think that would be a fair assessment, right, Cody? I mean, they're immensely talented, both Todd Peterson and Zach Hess. But they have flaws. They get drafted in the seventh round. Both of them do. Little surprised. But both Peterson and Hess have, Let's call it what it is. They have the stuff. And a big league team is going to look at those guys, and they're going to look at Hess and Peterson as potential. And they're going to believe that they can harness said potential. They can, due to summer ball and single A and double A and all that kind of stuff coming up through their farm system, that they're going to be able to purge them of their bad habits or their tendencies. In the case of Zach Hess, that's striking out a lot of batters, but then also giving up the long ball too much. In the case of Peterson, it's being more consistent, going from striking out someone to walking them or vice versa. So even though Peterson and Hess still have eligibility left, I wouldn't say there's a good chance that they're going to be coming back. I think they're gone. The money that they're slotted to receive as signing bonuses, plus, here's the other thing. So now you got four Tigers currently on the roster that are gone. Josh Smith was a second-round pick taken on Monday. He goes to the New York Yankees. Zach Watson's going to the Baltimore Orioles as a third-rounder. And then Hess and Peterson are both seventh-round picks. So if you're them, you go ahead and take the money and run. Because the only thing they can do is look at their teammate Antoine Duplantis, who, by the way, is still not drafted. Now, this is a young man who everyone that watches baseball says is one of the best baseball players on the field. Good teammate, high character guy. This is a guy who was drafted in the seventh round last year and decided to come back to LSU. This is why you never come back if you're for your senior season, because you have absolutely no leverage in the negotiations with Major League Baseball teams. They on purpose. Jake Magnum from Mississippi State.
Close.
It's close enough.
Mangum.
Thank you.
It's not so much the pronunciation, it was the enunciation you got wrong.
Or the order of the letters.
Right, your emphasis was in the wrong. Is it Verlander or Verlander?
Oh, nice. But Jake didn't get drafted till late yesterday. He's the all-time hits leader in the SEC. But he's also a senior. Big league ball clubs use that to their advantage. Oh, you're a good ball player. You have talent. You're a good team guy. Guess what? You get the gas face because we don't care, because we're instead going to take a guy who's an underclassman because we have to negotiate with them. You have no negotiating power whatsoever. So, Antoine Duplantis, congratulations on going back to school. We won't need to take you until the 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th round, whenever the hell we want to. This is why I'm never, ever, you're never going to hear me say, don't go get your money. This is why I had no problems with Greedy Williams deciding to declare early and get into the NFL draft, or Devin White deciding not to come back for his senior season. Or I didn't even have problems with Ben Simmons leaving after having a cup of coffee in Baton Rouge, or Naz Reid leaving, or Tremont Waters leaving. You know why? Because as much as we want to have these rose-colored glasses that everything's great and guys come there to get their education and enjoy the college experience, this is a business, man. And Major League Baseball is showing you once again, and they do this every single year. This is a business. Did Antoine Duplantis become less of a player? No. He got better. He developed more of a power swing. Career high in home runs. Still is a good outfielder. Still has speed. Still is a team leader. Didn't become a worse player, yet he's not drafted. Because big league ball clubs know, We can negotiate and we can lowball this kid and we can take him later because we can. So showing loyalty to your university doesn't mean jack to the big league ball clubs. Now, it means something to Duplantis because he wanted to come back and he wanted to play for LSU and he loves LSU. His whole family loves LSU. His younger brother, Mondo, doesn't need to even be in college. He could be a professional track and field star globally and have sponsorship money. But he decided to come to LSU too because their parents came to LSU. Their older brother came to LSU. They love LSU. So it means something to Antoine and his family for him to be at LSU. It means something to a lot of those guys. For basketball, I think of Skylar Mays. If he wanted to, yeah, he decided to come back to school. But if he wanted to, he could go play overseas. Maybe not get into the NBA, but he could go play professional ball. Make a little money. He decided to come back. I'm all about those guys. I love when those kids do that, when those young men and women do that and decide that they want to stick around and they want to play for their university because they love their teammates and they love their coaches and they love being part of campus life. That's great. I wish we had more of that. But the reality is that the professional ranks don't give a damn about your loyalty to your college team. They prove it over and over and over and over again. Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL. They don't care, man. They don't care if you're in the transfer portal 1,400 times. They don't care if you have off-the-field issues that embarrassed your team or your coaching staff or embarrassed your university. They don't care. If you're talented, you're talented. And if they can get you at a cheap enough rate, they'll get you at a cheap enough rate. Plain and simple. It's a little bit of a mini rant there, Cody, didn't I? I started off the Wednesday edition with a little bit of a rant. But I saw it coming. I saw it coming. So, congratulations to Zach Watson and Zach Hess and Todd Peterson. Go get your money. Josh Smith the day before, go get your money. Good for them. Big up to Todd Lott, too, for the Raging Cajuns. He's a junior. He could come back. Don't. Just don't. You got a chance. You had a great year. You're a junior. Go get your money. Try to live your dream. More Major League Baseball draft talk when we come back here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Soundcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Want to give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. So this is where we stand right now with LSU in the Major League Baseball draft. Two rounds are in the books. Your current players on the roster right now that will be taking part in the Super Regional versus Florida State, which, by the way, we'll break that down. We'll give you a little bit of a preview of that in the second hour, even before we bring on the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair. So your four current players, Josh Smith, once again, second round, 67th overall pick by the New York Yankees. Nearly $1 million signing bonus. He gone. Zach Watson, third round by the Baltimore Orioles, 79th overall pick. That was the first pick of the third round yesterday. That's a nice six-figure signing bonus. He'll be gone. Then later in the seventh round, about a dozen picks apart from one another, Zach Hess was taken by the Detroit Tigers with the 202nd overall pick. And then Todd Peterson was taken by the Washington Nationals with the 213th overall pick. So four players off the board, current roster players. Interesting to note, so Algarza not drafted. There are some thoughts that he may be a second-day pick, especially the way he played in the last half of the season. He's a very good catcher, and we saw what he's been able to do with his bat in the last month. Now, reports coming out of Baton Rouge is that if he wasn't going to be selected in the second day, if he wasn't going to be a pick through rounds 1 through 10 in the first 2 days, that he's coming back. So that's a good sign if you're LSU. You get that piece back, woo, that's good. Because now, anyone that's going to be drafted now is going to be iffy. Anjuan Duplantis is a senior. He's graduating, so you lose him. And you'll lose Watson, you'll lose Hess, you'll lose Peterson, you'll lose Josh Smith. Okay, that's a lot of firepower, obviously. But you still have Daniel Cabrera coming back. Even if Cabrera gets drafted, he's probably not going to leave for that because the signing bonuses decrease rapidly. Plus, I think Cabrera could use another year of seasoning. He's still got the power, but he slumped a little bit this year for the Tigers. You have him come back. You'll have Cade Beloso coming back as well. He's a true freshman, the John Curtis star. So, Garza. You have that great freshman class that's going to get a little bit older, like guys like C.J. Willis. Not to mention, you'll have Cole Henry and Landon Marceau back as well. Your two anchors of the rotation moving forward. And you'll have the young man, the two sports star, the guy that reminds people of Chad Jones. That's a pretty good comparison, by the way. He was pretty good, right, Cody? I think he won a couple of national championships, one in each sport, if I remember
correctly.
Right, I was
going to say, and not even in the same sport.
Yeah, not even in the same sport. So that's a good comparison. So you still got a lot of firepower coming back. But I know there's some concerns because this is a tough time of the year. It's been made easier because of baseball's decision to have the draft not during the College World Series, which was always awkward. Not to mention how much of a distraction it was that you're in the middle of the game or you're taking BP and you're in an elimination game there in Omaha and someone comes up to you and you're like, here you go, here's the phone. And it says someone on the other end of the phone going, hey, you've been drafted. Are you ready to be a Detroit Tiger? Actually, I was taking BP right now and trying to focus on helping my team win a national championship. But sure, I'm ready to go to the Motor City. Thankfully, they changed that, and now they have the draft early in the week of the Super Regionals, which is better, but still not great. I'll give you for example. We heard the stories coming out last night. If you listened to Tiger Rag Radio last night between 6 and 8 right here on 103.7 The Game, you heard this story told. LSU also had four signees that had been drafted, four members of the 19-20 class. We talked about it yesterday on the show. Daniel Esposito went in the first round by the Cleveland Indians, 25th overall pick. He's gone. He's not coming. That's a seven-figure signing bonus. Reese Hines, the infielder, he was drafted in the second round by the Cincinnati Reds, 49th overall. He's likely not coming to Baton Rouge. Jimmy Lewis, we talked about it yesterday. He was also taken in the second round by the Los Angeles Dodgers, 78th overall. He could use some grooming, but man, that money's still going to be good. I doubt Jimmy comes to LSU. But the fourth guy that was drafted as a signee out of the first 2 days of the draft occurred yesterday. Christian Cairo was selected in the third round by the Cleveland Indians with the 130th overall pick. Now, Christian's dad played in the big leagues. They were actually on campus yesterday at LSU. They toured. Apparently, from reports that we heard last night on Tiger Rag Radio, the mom cried when they took a tour of the new weight room facility, that it was that overwhelming, the whole experience of being there at LSU, her baby going to LSU. and the family and their handlers had come out and said, well, look, if he's not a first-day pick and the money has to be a certain amount, he's just going to go to LSU. They were talking with the academic advisor, filling out the paperwork to make the young man's schedule. And the phone rings. It's the Cleveland Indians. And Cairo gets off the phone. He says, thank you very much. He walks down the hall, goes to Paul Menary's office, tells him, thank you, coach, but I just got selected, and I'm going to go to the big leagues. Because the Indians overpaid. Where he slotted at 130 does not warrant nearly $1 million signing bonus, but that's what the Indians gave him because they knew they needed to do that to secure the young man. So he is there on campus. He's filled out the paperwork. He's met the coaching staff. He's toured the facilities. Mom has broke down and cried with emotion seeing where her baby is going to be playing college baseball. They're in the new weight room facility, which is supposed to be state-of-the-art. He's filling out his course schedule. Major League Baseball. Bring. Bring. Hey, man, we got some money. And Christian Cairo said, bye, Felicia.
I mean, I don't guess you have to have, you can't really, you don't, there's no need to be loyal to something that you didn't actually ever really join or be part of in the first place. Right.
Right. But that goes back to my original point. These big league ball clubs don't give a damn.
I mean, even for the Cairo kid, I don't feel like he owed LSU anything just yet.
No, and because he put out a number, and he said, hey, this was what it has to be, right?
He had a backup plan. Don't be mad at a kid for having a backup plan.
I'm not mad at the kid.
No, I'm saying in general. I wasn't talking about you. You were very sensitive this week. You're like me this morning. I'm sorry. I was just talking in the general sense.
No, you can't be mad. And Paul's not mad either. But how frustrating is that, Cody, if you're Paul Menary? You're losing guys currently on your roster. You're trying to prepare for a super regional. And the prospects that you have supposedly coming in to replace the guys that are being drafted are also being drafted and are being leaving campus while they're filling out their class schedule. Because a big league ball club's like, all right, we'll almost give you $1 million after all. We'll overpay for your slot. Woo. We got to hit a break. More RP3 and Company next.
The six, but the win was costly. Andrew McCutchen caught in a rundown, torn ACL. His season is over. Fifth straight win for the Astros, 11-5 at Seattle. Baltimore won 12-11 at Texas. For the Orioles, Pedro Severino, 3 home runs, 6 RBIs. Francisco Lindor homered twice. Cleveland, 5-2 win over Minnesota. Eduardo Nunez, 3-run shot in Boston's 8-3 win at Kansas City. A grand slam for Miguel Cabrera. Detroit 9, Tampa Bay 6. Rays have now lost 4 in a row. Yanks lose a series opener for the first time since April, 4-3 at Toronto. French Open today has quarterfinal matches for both the defending champ Simona Halep and American Madison Keys. This is NBC Sports Radio.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. Also check us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Began today's show talking about the Major League Baseball draft, how it's affected the LSU Tigers, and even had a Raging Cajun selected, Todd Lott. Big up to him, 9th round. Going to the St. Louis Cardinals. But some other big news came out yesterday. SEC announced their partnerships, so to speak, with the bowl tie-ins. And they have dropped Shreveport, Louisiana, and they've decided to pick up Las Vegas.
Are you ready to touch football?
Are you ready for SEC school to be in Vegas for like 4 days. I'm not. The off the field shenanigans, something happening on the strip is just going to mean more.
In the SEC, it just means more.
This is what Greg Sankey had to say. Okay. The Las Vegas Bowl provides the SEC with a new and exciting destination for our student-athletes and traveling fans at a location outside our traditional geographic footprint and in a much-anticipated matchup with a Pac-12 conference opponent. From the perspective of playing a Pac-12 team, I like that. I like having an SEC team. You know, the one thing that's always prevented, that's always never really been in the mix is an SEC team playing a Pac-12 team, right? With the exception of, I'm thinking, the Oregon-Auburn National Championship game. That springs to mind. That'd be the Cam Newton year. Yeah. That was a national title game, but you never get an SEC team in the Rose Bowl, right?
Well, no, those games, no. In the bowl games, no. I apologize. I was thinking just in general.
No, in bowl games,
in bowl
though,
games,
yeah.
No. Yeah,
we don't get to play the Pac-12. So, in that regard, I like this. And, obviously, they're going to be playing in the new stadium built out there for the Raiders. And the Las Vegas Bowl has been matching the Pac-12 in the Mountain West or BYU because no one knows how to party in Vegas like the Cougars.
I feel like that's just some kind of running joke. They're just trolling an entire universe. This will be funny.
The new Las Vegas Bowl, the old one was played on the first Saturday of bowl season. It was a minor bowl game. This new one will now be played after Christmas and will receive the Pac-12's top team. Get this, the Pac-12's top team not participating in the college football playoff or New Year's 6 day bowl game. So you're going to get the third best Pac-12 team playing in the Las Vegas Bowl. So you can see why this would be desirable for the SEC, right? You get to play the third best team, maybe even a team that played in the Pac-12 championship. Possibly. So like, this is going to be a marquee opponent.
About the sixth best team in the SEC taking on the third best team in the Pac-12.
Probably.
Sounds competitive.
Yes. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Come on down, Stanford. Let's see what you got.
Bring your third best guy. I'll give you my like little cousin's friend from down the road, and we'll see who wins. I'm sorry.
No, you're not wrong. The Big Ten and the SEC will both be heading to the Las Vegas Bowl. Okay, they'll be taking turns facing the Pac-12 when the game moves into the new billion dollar NFL stadium in 2020.
Because that's not confusing or convoluted or anything. That's fine.
Pac-12 will always be there. That is a year in, year out bowl tie-in. And then it'll just rotate. 1 year it'll be an SEC team. Next year it'll be a Big Ten team.
So the SEC has the even years then? If it's going to be SEC first.
I think it's SEC first.
So then 2020 will be SEC, 2021. So the even years, I care about the Las Vegas Bowl.
Yes. The Big Ten has 6 year agreements with 11 bowls, including new deals with Las Vegas and the Belk Bowl in Charlotte, which also has SEC ties.
Yeah, that's an SEC for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you get a SEC Big Ten matchup now in Charlotte. The Big Ten will alternate with the SEC in Vegas and in Charlotte with the Big Ten. I'm sorry, taking odd number years. And there you go, Cody. You actually guessed correctly. The Big Ten is going to be taking the odd number years in Las Vegas, in the even numbered years in Charlotte. And the SEC will take the others.
Flipped a coin, got it right.
There you go. So the SEC will be taking the even-numbered years in Vegas and the odd-numbered years in Charlotte.
Now, the other bowl game here, Raymond, I know you know the name of it, but I think it's funny when there is the name of a bowl game that is not Sarsaparilla and yet still rhymes with it. They managed to make a bowl game that rhymes with the word Sarsaparilla.
Is it Gasparilla?
That's what I was going to say. That's what I'm going to. What do you think?
I have no idea.
That's what I mean. Or is it Gasparilla, like quesadilla? Is it Gasparilla?
I don't know. It's in Tampa. There's no telling.
I've never heard of it. But the Gasparilla Bowl.
So that's the other thing.
No one knows.
So the Las Vegas and Charlotte deals will replace the Holiday Bowl in San Diego for the Big Ten. The conference is also adding the Cheez-It Bowl in Phoenix to its lineup.
That's awesome.
So you had a lot of bowl tie-in shakeups, right? The conferences are changing where they go geographically. That's done for recruiting. We saw how well that paid off for LSU being in Arizona last year. You get to go to a different place. You get to see different recruits, more importantly, get to see you. Okay, this is why they do this, so they can increase their footprint across the country. The SEC also added its new agreement with the, we're going to guess, the Gasparilla Bowl.
That's what I'm going with. That's what I was going to say.
What's a Gasparilla?
It's got to be like a brand. Yeah,
is that a brand?
That's what I was thinking. The Google machine. Why is there no Google Bowl? Because Google doesn't need it.
Is it a Florida wildflower? I don't know. So the SEC added its new agreement with the Gasparilla Bowl in Tampa.
Come on, the 2020 Gasparilla Pirate Festival, Saturday, January 25th. Hold on, we are on to a whole other thing now.
Is this pirate themed?
Forget whatever you were. The Gasparilla Pirate Festival is a large parade and a host of related community events held in Tampa, Florida, almost every year since 19... This is related. The theme of festivities is the legend of Jose Gaspar, a mythical Spanish pirate who supposedly operated in southwest Florida from the late 1700s until the early 1800s.
I'm actually intrigued now.
Does this button fit?
Doing what he does best.
I'm not sure if this is one of those times.
Not sports talk.
Related, though.
It's related. You did not need to press that button on that. So they have like a pirate festival in Tampa. They're going to play this, obviously, at the Bucs Stadium, I would assume.
Right. Raymond James, right.
With the big pirate ship. Do they make everyone dress in pirates? That could be intriguing.
He is also, okay, here we go. Jose Gaspar is also known by his nickname, Gasparilla. He is an apocryphal Spanish pirate known as, quote, the last of the Buccaneers. It's going to be the Gasparilla Bowl presented by somebody.
I love that.
It's got to be. Here we go. Home. It's the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl. So now we got it. Now we're making headway here. I tell you what. It's the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl. And the bowl logo colors are Miami Dolphins colors, so I'm not sure if that's a troll job or not. Because it's that weird blue and the orange.
So we have a bowl game not named after a historic pirate that takes place, possibly is associated with a pirate festival.
Oh, and it was the St. Petersburg Bowl. This is the new St. Petersburg Bowl. In 2008, that's what it started as, and now it has become the Gasparilla Bowl. Presented by Bad Boy Mowers, Gasparilla being the pirate who is the last of the Buccaneers. So it all makes sense now.
Sign me up.
That took 6 minutes to figure. That's a problem.
I had to Google two different things
to figure this out.
I am down for some Gasparilla Bowl and Las Vegas Bowl. Good job for the SEC. But you know what that means, though, Cody?
What does that mean?
The SEC did not, in fact, renew its contract with the Independence Bowl in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Well, the Independence Bowl, formerly the Duck Commander Bowl,
It's the Walk-Ons Independence Bowl now.
And now it's the Walk-Ons Independence Bowl.
The SEC will head into its new bowl cycle with 10 postseason slots, not counting the playoff.
I have a question.
But here's the thing. Over the last 5 years, the SEC has only had enough bowl-eligible teams to fill its Independence Bowl slot twice.
See, my question was, am I supposed to be upset that the SEC is no longer part of the Independence Bowl? Is that supposed to like bum me out? Because I'm not even trying to be a you know what here, but I don't care. And to be even more fair, if the SEC lost its connection with the Belk Bowl, and I know Belk has a much stronger tie in it, but I wouldn't care about that either. So if I'm being complete, I'm not trying to say I specifically don't care about the Independence Bowl, but I equally don't care about some of these lesser SEC tie-in bowls. Whatever the name of the bowl is, wherever the bowl is held, that doesn't really, not that important to me. I know it's important because, like you said, recruiting. I know behind the scenes.
It's also important for the state for economic revenue.
Right, so fair enough. Behind the scenes, the other side of
tax
the curtain.
Tax revenue.
There are important things. I'll buy that. But
So, as much as you may not care about the Independence Bowl, and I've been twice as a fan.
Right. But the Independence Bowl is still happening, right?
It's still happening, and here's the crazy thing about this. So they lose the SEC, and that's true. The SEC hasn't had enough bowl-eligible teams because they have too many.
They eat each other up.
They have too many bowl teams. And they always have a team in the college football playoff. So that's one of the slots, right? So that's always what happens. It's like, boom, okay. So they're always missing a team that can't go. So like last year, they had Duke versus Temple. That did not move the needle in Shreveport.
Not quite.
Okay. I was there for that game, actually. So they lose the SEC, but how much of a loss is that because the SEC hasn't been able to field a team for the bowl game, right? So they've been having to go to other conferences and go down to Conference USA or the American to find a team. Do you know who they replaced the SEC with?
I was like the Sun Belt.
The Pac-12. The Independence Bowl locked up the Pac-12. Okay. So you're going to see.
That shows you how much the SEC brings up the value of something, though. Because like, there's no other shot at the Independence Bowl bringing in a Power 5 school like that. Because it's an at-large versus now Pac-12, right? Because that's what it was at-large and SEC, right?
Last year, they had Temple in their bowl game. Now they're going to get themselves a Pac-12 school. Think of an ACC versus Pac-12.
It's an independent.
They still have the ACC component.
So it's the ACC, okay.
Yeah. So they lose the SEC. So they'll get like what? Just think about it like this, Cody. This is why I get excited. Think about this. The Pirate himself. Yeah. Oh, Leach.
Yeah, Michael.
Could bring the Washington State Cougs to Northwest Louisiana. How much fun would that be?
That would be a blast. I would hope for bigger things.
You would hope for bigger
things. For Mike Leach. But you know what? I'm down if he ends up here. We might have to go take the Washington State flag and go fly it around.
Or you could have a possible matchup throw this at you, too. They're both down, so they don't have the – they're not the national brands they used to be.
Okay, but so what about Alabama and
– I saw Alabama twice. I saw Alabama once in the eyeball, by the way. They lost. This is pre-Nick Saban.
You don't say.
USC versus, say, like Miami. In the eyeball.
See, that right there, that's what whoever's
running.
Now, that
would put butts in the seats,
whoever's running
right?
The Independence Bowl, that's their best case scenario. Or, exactly, that's the best case scenario. Something, or like a Virginia Tech, something like that in a bad season.
They may be down, but they still have a big enough name
that
you're going to get some of the fans that are going to come. And you can still lie to the fans and tell them about a gumbo that is.
With catfish in it, stop.
What are you doing? What are you doing with that gumbo they
the
made last
year?
The
only argument, just to play devil's advocate, because we seem to love to do that here, is that was also the theory and the plan when the matchup was SEC, ACC. You know, these Texas A&M, well, before Clemson got real good or whatever. You know, so there was...
Yeah, but you were still getting guys from the Southeast. Now you're bringing someone out from California,
from way
Washington,
out from nowhere.
Oregon.
So that's the bigger difference.
That have no idea about mosquitoes and humidity.
Mm-hmm. The plan for the Independence Bowl there is, I see the plan. And
it's a good plan.
It makes sense.
With the SEC, because they knew it was coming, they felt that the SEC was going to drop them. So they dropped the SEC instead of having to go, okay, we have to take a Conference USA team.
Right.
They somehow finagled their way getting a Pac-12.
I mean, I guessed Sun Belt, so that'll tell you. So they did something right.
That wouldn't have been a bad guess.
That's what I thought. First. That's what I thought. I thought that's where this was leading.
So maybe it's the best thing here. Good up for the Independence Bowl. Getting in the Pac-12, and good up for the SEC taking part in some type of pirate festival in Tampa.
Can we do more? Game. Can we do more like pirate history research? Like, we got to pick a day for that. That was fun. Gasparilla, my new favorite pirate.
We need to put in a travel request for the Gasparilla Bowl.
Get
in
out of
Tampa.
The way, Jack Sparrow.
Oh, you can just see all the people dressed up as pirates.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
I'm kind of intrigued by it.
I still can't figure out if it's a troll job or not. The Tampa Bay based bowl game
has the colors
of Miami
the Dolphins
color. I don't know who's in charge of this, but bravo to you. That's funny.
Oh, we got to hit a break. Having too much fun in this first hour. We'll wrap up the first hour after this on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. Also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. You know, the NCAA baseball season is just right now in the Super Regionals, but softball College World Series could have been kept going on after last night. But then this happened last night to wrap things up.
A little flare, and that will get down in front of a view. Prober to the plate, the throw, and she's safe. And UCLA makes it an even dozen. And they are back on top with a 12th national championship.
That was awesome.
Yes.
Go watch that video if you have. That was awesome. You want to talk about a play at the plate for the whole kit and caboodle, two outs last. What?
Two outs, bottom of the seventh, and they just got it done.
I mean, that's a solid single to the left center field gap, a strong throw to the plate, and just an athletic slide. Go watch the video. Look at it on Twitter. That was cool. If you like just good baseball, softball plays, go check that out. That was fun.
Walk off for the national championship.
Right.
UCLA defeats Oklahoma 5-4. Now, the first game was not very close. Remember, UCLA set a record for home runs and runs scored in a College World Series championship game. They beat up Oklahoma, 17-3 or 17-4. Just absolutely curb stomped the Sooners. Last night's game was far closer. Oklahoma actually tied it, made it a tied game there, 4-4 late with, I want to say, a home run. But then Bruins second baseman Kinsley Washington hit a single that scored Prober, who raced all the way from second to beat an exciting throw at home to clinch the win. UCLA earned the sweep in the championship round after beating the Sooners 16-3 in game one of the matchup. And as you heard on the call, Tuesday's victory secured the Bruins' 12th national championship in softball, but their first since 2010. So congratulations to the UCLA Bruins on being crowned Women's College World Series national champions. That's going to do it for the first hour. Second hour coming up, we're going to preview LSU Florida State right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had told y'all all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
You know, but it's going to be so exciting. I think it's an epic matchup. Florida State against LSU, two of the blue bloods in college baseball, super regional. I think our fans will probably be pretty excited. It might be hard to get a ticket for next weekend, is my guess. But, you know, obviously we don't know how the results of the weekend will go. And if I don't know if it'll be Mike's last games as a coach or if he'll beat us and go to the World Series. But to me, it's a great honor to coach against him in what potentially could be his last game. So I think the world of Mike and his contributions to college baseball are so, you know, can't even begin to count them. So I'm looking forward to seeing him and talking to him soon.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Or simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. You want to give us a call? You still got time. Pick up the phone. Dial 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Once again, the only thing you have to do to get on the air is just be kind to Cody Schutz. That's all. Now, if you pick up the phone and you talk to my boy and you start getting ornery with him, not going to get through. So you got to be nice to Cody.
Can I tell you, today especially, shouldn't be that hard. I'm very excited for today, Raymond. I told you there's a Pokemon Direct coming up at 8 o'clock. I cannot wait for that. So if at 8 a.m. you see me slightly distracted, that'll be what happens there at 8 a.m. So I'm very excited for the Pokemon Direct. Compliment that, and you'll get on the air for sure. Another thing you can compliment, I found out on Twitter this morning, didn't realize, a new season of Black Mirror dropped on Netflix. So I'm very excited to check out the new season of Black Mirror. I don't understand what you're referencing over. All right, I'll push the button. That's fine.
Cody Schutz, doing what he does best, interrupting sports talk with Rika. Not sports talk.
So Pokemon Direct at 8 o'clock, to recap, new season of Black Mirror on Netflix. These are my highlights at 7 a.m.
I mean, it's okay. I was excited about the new poster for Stranger Things 3, so that's fine.
July 4th.
Yes, that is.
You want to know when that comes out.
We talked LSU baseball and the draft primarily in the first hour. Recap to give you now the total of four guys, current players, that have been drafted by Major League Baseball teams. Once again, that's Josh Smith in the second round, Zach Watson third round, and Zach Hess and Todd Peterson in the seventh round. LSU's also had four signees of the 1920 class that have been drafted as well. Esposito in the first round, Hines second round, Lewis and Cairo in the second and third rounds, respectively. We also touched on UCLA winning the Women's College World Series. LSU baseball team, though, they have their sights on getting to the College World Series in Omaha, but they have to face Florida State. And you heard in the clip coming out of the break about the amount of respect that longtime LSU head baseball man, the skipper himself, Paul Maneri, has, the man he's going to face, the winningest coach in college baseball history, Mike Martin of Florida State. And Paul spoke even more highly of Coach Martin, who's now retiring after this season.
I'm a big Mike Martin fan. I have been my whole life. I grew up the son of a coach. And so my heroes growing up were other college baseball coaches. And Mike's been at it for so many years and, you know, over 2,000 career wins and a real gentleman. And I've just always liked Mike. We've had a few games. I've been able to coach against him. And to know that I'm glad they beat Georgia. It allows us to stay home. I shouldn't have said that probably because Georgia's another SEC team, but hopefully Greg Sankey will forgive me for saying that. It was really, I'm glad it worked out because we get to play at home, all right?
I love how that went from praising Mike Martin, how much of an impact he made. He grew up a son of a coach, and he loved, you know, Mike Martin's this icon, this, you know, huge titan of college baseball. And then it turned into throwing a little shade to Georgia's way.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of when Coach O was going back to play Ole Miss, and he was talking about some of his memories he had from Oxford and this gas station that sold really, really good chicken on a stick. The best chicken on a stick he ever had. And then someone looked at him sideways and was like, "Coach, do you realize what you're saying?" And Coach O immediately hit him with the
Not better than Raising Cane's.
Not better than Raising Cane's, though. So Maneri's over here like, "Yeah, I'm really glad they beat Georgia." Oh, God, Georgia's in the S. No. Well, you know, it's okay if they beat, you know, darn. Good job for the Bulldogs. They tried. Coach O, "My best chicken I've ever had in my life." Not better than Raising Cane's, though. It ain't better than Raising Cane's.
I'm not better than Raising Cane's.
Oh. When coaches say things and then, whoopsie.
Love it. Mike Martin, though, is one of the best to do it, one of the most respected coaches. Never was able to win a national championship, despite all the success that he's had at Florida State and they being a national program. So it's good to see what they've been able to do. They looked like, you know, once again, even though they're a national brand, they were the 3 seed in the Athens Regional. And they just clobbered everyone in the Athens Regional to win that and move on to the Supers. This is what Mike Martin had to say about winning the Athens Regional.
To say that I'm happy is an understatement, because I'm happy for these three young men that are up here, and I'm happy for 24 other guys that poured their heart and soul into getting it done. And I can't say enough about the atmosphere in our dugout. The guys that were not playing, you could not find one single guy that you could say, oh yeah, he hasn't played the entire tournament. Because that's the kind of men we have. We will battle you. We will compete. And the guys up here know that the guys on the bench are pulling hard for them. They're not saying, pop up, strike out, do something to make me mad. So they get taken out. They're Seminoles. They played their hearts out.
That's Mike Martin there.
Makes me wonder if he's run into that issue in recent years on the team.
Does sound that sounds like, and he's an old school coach.
No, he don't play. I wouldn't imagine he plays.
Mike
that,
Martin ain't played.
So it just makes me wonder, because you know Florida State for their career has been down a little bit in recent years. I know they made it to the College World Series within the last handful of years, but they've been down historically, I'll say. And maybe that kind of sounds like he likes this team because he sees less, I hate to use the word hatred, I can't think, less spite from the bench players on this team. It's just something interesting I picked. It just sounded like that was coming from somewhere that he's coming from personally, not something you just offer up. No one asked, you know, hey, coach, do you have a problem with your bench guys or your starters on this team? No, he just offered up that information. So just something interesting I kind of picked up on.
This is Martin's 40th year.
Hey, how many times has he made the NCAA tournament?
I have to count.
The answer is 40.
Every year?
Every single year. And guess what? You want to know something else? Ask me. Answer this. How many times has he won 40 or more games in a season?
Is it 40?
The answer is 40.
Get out of town.
I am almost 100% certain. I will double check to make sure, but like, take that to the bank.
He's made it to the College World Series. He's led Florida State to the College World Series. I'm looking at this.
Excuse me. 41 consecutive seasons. Excuse
41
me.
Consecutive he has won, seasons.
When they won their 43rd game. No, it's gone even longer than that. It's their 43 consecutive years now. He has won at least 40 games. That is ridiculous. And that comes from Seminoles.com.
It appears to me, Cody, that he's also reached the College World Series 16 times as the head man.
Jesus.
Now, Florida State had success getting to the College World Series back in the old days, in the 50s and the 60s. Florida State is the second winningest program in the history of college baseball. Since 1990, Florida State has had more 50-win seasons, hosted more NCAA tournaments, and finished in the top 10 more than any other team in the nation, including LSU.
19 conference championships.
That's ridiculous, man. That's ridiculous. Mike Martin took over in 1980. I was two when he took over as head man. Two. The field is named after him. And he's still coaching.
Right.
That's all you got to know right there. He became the first coach in history to win 2,000 games. He's had 85 players drafted in the first 10 rounds of the Major League Baseball draft, including 19 first-round picks. That's ridiculous. 2,000 wins. And yet has never won the College World Series. He's won all these regional championships, been to the NCAA tournament seemingly every year. Been to the College World Series 16 times. They finished as national runner-up in 86 and 99. That's phenomenal.
The lowest win total I found in a spreadsheet of his entire career as a head coach at Florida State, the lowest win total he had in any single season was in 2016 when Florida State went 41 and 22.
In 99, They finished as runner-up to rival Miami, which is a good baseball program as well. In just the other year would have been 86.
The numbers are stupid. If you go find this man's, the numbers are dumb. At the end of last season, he had 2,271 wins. At the end of last season.
Nice. 86, they lost. They finished as runner-up. I'm seeming here. Who was the champion in 86? LSU was... Was that the first time LSU reached the College World Series? Yeah, was 86?
Is that one of those weird Wichita State years? Just remember, they were really good.
Arizona.
There you go.
Yeah. Arizona won it all that year. But LSU, I think the 86 was the first time LSU had gone to the College World Series.
When you search, when you Google 1986 CWS, the picture is Skip. Give it, like, they didn't win, but the picture is Skip.
Skip. So, Mike Martin, it's a hell of a hell of a career. Tremendous career. That'll be a big storyline. He's one of the best to ever do it. Maneri has immense amount of respect for him. So does him and Skip Bertman are friends. So this is the marquee. For me, this is the marquee super regional of the weekend. I'm intrigued by some of the others. Auburn, who's one of the worst teams in the SEC, winning a regional and then playing at North Carolina. That intrigues me. That Ole Miss at Arkansas, the Fayetteville Super Regional, that's intriguing to me. But the one that I think has got the most juice is Florida State, LSU. You're talking about two of the top five or top three programs in college baseball history facing off with a berth to Omaha on the line. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
I mean, this is USC, Cal State Fullerton Super Regional levels.
That's good.
Could you imagine a USC, Cal State Fullerton Super Regional? I remember as a young boy watching Cal State Fullerton, and like if LSU never existed, wanting to go and play baseball for Cal State Fullerton for no reason really, just because they were that school that you never heard of doing anything else. But every year when postseason college baseball rolled around, there was Fullerton. Doing their thing. And I mean, they're still around. They're not as good as they used to be.
They're kind of like Rice. They're not as good as Rice. You know, Rice traditionally.
Tulane was trying to. Boy, Tulane was there early 2000, but you know.
So, at the box, though, more baseball. Florida State, LSU this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, if necessary, Monday. You can listen to all three games live right here on 103.7 The Game.
Did get tickets for Saturday.
You did get tickets?
Yeah, I have to like fight the rest of my family. We'll see. My dad wasn't able to get tickets for the whole weekend, but he was able to get tickets for the opening game. So I'm going to have to see which one of my brothers I'll have to fight in order to get there. But we'll make like he's bigger than me. But I think if I come with a plan, I think I can take him.
Nice. The Schutz household, they're going to do Fight Club style.
It'll be Battle Royale, Hunger Games type
Hunger
stuff
Games style
for that extra ticket.
Gets to go to the Supers.
My dad sits on his like big iron throne. Fight, peasants.
Pre-game on Saturday, 1:30. First pitch, 2 o'clock. Game 2, 4:30 pre-game. First pitch, 5 o'clock at Alex Box Stadium. And then 7 o'clock on Monday night if a game 3 is necessary. Once again, you can listen to all three games right here on 103.7 The Game. And almost a month ago, it didn't appear like there was going to be any baseball at the box at this time of the year. Yet, here it is, and this is what Zach Watson, who was drafted yesterday with the first pick in the third round to the Baltimore Orioles, had to say about getting another opportunity to play in front of the home crowd.
Oh, I mean, it's huge. I mean, we love to play at Alex Box Stadium, and everybody knows it. So just to get to come back and play here, it's awesome. And we're going to bring the juice, and we're going to be ready to play.
Be bringing the juice. I have questions. What kind of juice? Grape?
This place is getting lit. Hey, I got my icy on. I know you got your icy on.
Is that not related? Is that not? No? Well, okay.
Oh, but anytime we get to play less, I'm a happy man. I can't wait to see him on Thursday for the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame press conference. You get to talk to him afterwards.
It's going
to
be great.
Oh, he's going to be a true. Don't think that I'm not going to ask him about Rick Ross.
This is what you're asking.
Because that's happening.
Just ask him, Coach, do you have Rick Ross's phone number, like, saved in your phone? That's all you need to know. Any other question you might have, you can answer it yourself with that information. If Rick Ross's phone number is saved in Les Miles' phone, then that's all you need to know. Their friendship is blossoming. And we can only hope and pray.
And ask about his acting career.
Well, you have to.
Coach, how does it feel to be the villain? No, I can't wait.
No one cares about. Oh, you have to ask him about the laugh. Can you get him to do the laugh? Mwahaha.
Oh, man. Well, we come back here on RP3 and Company. Houston Astros, guess what? They won again. Not surprised. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game.
Right-hander delivers. And Bregman hits this in the air pretty well to left field. Santana is going back, still going back at the wall, and that is off the wall. Fisher scores easily. Bregman racing for second. The throw is offline, and it's an RBI double for Bregman. 3-1 Astros.
Bregman with a double last night, with a double again tonight. Now has 10 on the season, and he's starting to rack them up again.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Houston Astros just keep on winning. They teed off on the Seattle Mariners for an 11-5 victory late last night. Started off a little slow. Mariners were able to contain the Astros for the first couple of innings. Then Robinson crushed that ball into the upper deck. That gave him a little bit of a juice. But then came the fifth inning. After two quick outs, it looked like Seattle's starting pitcher Moore might be able to keep that strong start going. But then that's when things fell apart. Derek Fisher laced a double into center field. Then Bregman, the former LSU star, launched a double off the left field wall. And boom, just like that, it was 3-1 Astros. Michael Brantley got him a double down the third baseline, would add another run. Three straight two-out doubles for the Astros in that inning. Wade Miley, meanwhile, cruised through five innings with only giving up one solo home run on the night. That was through the first five innings. The sixth inning came, and he gave up the leadoff single to Malik Smith and then walk. So Miley was then pulled. He had the final line of the night, though, was five innings, six Ks, three hits, three walks, and three runs allowed. But it didn't matter. Even with getting himself in a little trouble, getting tagged with a couple of runs, the Astros still found a way to win this game. They headed into the seventh down 5-4. Brandon Brennan, yes, that's someone's actual name for the Seattle Mariners, he decided to walk the Astros pinch hitter because that's what you do. Then he gave up a single to Jake Marisnik, then an RBI single to Derek Fisher, then a steal to Fisher. And Bregman and Yuli Gurriel brought them on weak ground balls and a sac fly, respectively. So once again, and I've said this over and over again, this team is without three of its best hitters. The young man who they've looked to become part of the rotation, they just sent down to assignment to AAA. They had some errors. They had some missteps. And yet they still find a way to win games. And I've said it before. Championship teams, when they're depleted with their roster and they make mental errors and they still find a way to beat good teams or bad teams, that's a great sign of what this team can do for the rest of the season. Astros will be on 103.7 The Game once again tonight. Astro launch 8:30. First pitch 9:10. Game three of their set with the Seattle Mariners. You can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back here, the voice of the LSU Tigers joins us, Chris Blair, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber, 133 and 1133 in high definition. Led off the show talking about LSU baseball in the Major League Baseball draft. I don't want to touch on that before we go any further. Once again, four players on the current roster have been drafted. Josh Smith was taken in the second round by the New York Yankees, 67th overall pick. Nearly $1 million signing bonus slated for him. Reports are that Josh, they're going to convert him into a second baseman from shortstop to second baseman. Yesterday, the very first pick of the second day of the Major League Baseball draft, rounds 3 through 10. First pick in the third round, Zach Watson, the speedy center fielder with pop in his bat. Baltimore Orioles selected him with the 79th overall pick. And then not one but two LSU relievers were selected in the seventh round, Zach Hess, Todd Peterson. Hess going to the Tigers, Peterson going to the Nationals. Also have had four LSU signees drafted so far as well. Daniel Esposito went in the first round to the Cleveland Indians. He's a pitcher, 25th overall. Reese Hines, second rounder, selected by the Reds. Jimmy Lewis, second rounder by the Dodgers. And then Christian Cairo, third round by the Indians. He was actually on campus filling out his paperwork, putting his schedule together when he got the phone call and the Indians said, hey, we have more money for you. So far through the first 2 days of the Major League Baseball draft, the Tigers have had four current players selected and four signees drafted as well. We'll talk a little bit about the Major League Baseball draft and how it's affected LSU. We'll also get a preview of LSU taking on Florida State, two of the best programs historically in college baseball, this weekend at Alex Box Stadium with our next guest. He is the voice of the LSU Tigers. He's our good friend, the one and only Chris Blair. Chris, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Ray, I'm doing good, man. It should be a great one. You're absolutely right. You talk about two names that stand out to overall college baseball fans. Doesn't get much better than LSU and FSU.
That'll take place this weekend at the Box. Saturday will be game one. That'll start at 2 p.m. You can listen to that live right here on 103.7 The Game, as well as game two on Sunday at 5 o'clock, first pitch scheduled, and then, if necessary, game three. Chris, let's start there. It being such a marquee matchup, and you could argue the biggest matchup of any of the super regionals that are going on this weekend, were you surprised at all that it's not in prime time, or did you kind of have a feeling that this may be what it is due to the weather coming in off the Gulf?
Well, you know, I'd like to say that I had a feeling that that's, you know, what it was. But, you know, when it comes to the NCAA, I mean, you might as well. I don't know that there's any rhyme or reason. I don't know how they put any thought into it other than just going down a list. But, you know, I talked to people as we were leaving the ballpark on Sunday night, and I kind of had a feeling that they would want to put this one in where it had good TV windows. Now, of course, if you notice the first pitch times, you know, they're a little that kind of shows you that they're going to try to, you know, at least have it as one of the marquee matchups. Just so happens we're going to have to do it Saturday, Sunday, and if need be, on Monday. But I think there's going to be plenty of screen time for this matchup. I mean, number one, it's, as you said, two big programs that have had a lot of success over the years. You got Mike Martin and that story, 40 years, and it's his final year coaching. He's the winningest coach in college baseball, Division I level, but he doesn't have a national title, and he's got to go through Baton Rouge, a team that, you know, kind of sent them packing up in Omaha, in 2017. So I think there'll be plenty of coverage, even though we're going to have to do it on Saturday and Sunday.
We're talking with Chris Blair. He's the voice of the LSU Tigers right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Chris, let's go back to last weekend. I was fortunate enough to be able to check out two of the three games. The Friday night game, which was essentially batting practice against poor Stony Brook, and then Saturday's game, which was far more competitive against Southern Miss. I know heading into the regional, a lot of attention was paid to Arizona State. It ended up being Southern Miss was the biggest team that stood in front of LSU's path of winning the regional. What were your thoughts on what Southern Miss brought to the table and their fans, because they got loud inside Alex Box Stadium over the weekend?
Yeah, it was a great atmosphere. I mean, you know, when the brackets came out, I just looked at it immediately and said the best team outside of LSU in that bracket is Southern Miss, just because I know what they've done. I know who they play, and I know the type of program that they put together. So I expected Southern Miss to be the better team. Arizona State, you know, they had some home runs, but, you know, overall, when you really dug into the Sun Devils, it was not a, impressive or, they just did not get over, even though that, you know, the name kind of got them there. So it didn't really surprise me. And then, you know, as you pointed out, secondly, and Coach Maneri said this after the win on Friday against Stony Brook, I mean, you're looking for, you know, basically an SEC-type atmosphere because of the fact that A, Southern Miss is a good program, B, they got a great coach, and C, the fans from Hattiesburg were going to be able to get into Baton Rouge, and they were going to fill the stands. And as you said, they let their presence be known very early. And it was fun, you know, and during the timeouts, Doug Thompson and myself, you know, were looking out the window, kind of taking it all in, because you had USM fans making noise, and then they'd get a couple of seconds, and then they just get overwhelmed and drowned out by LSU fans. But all in all, it seemed like everybody had, for the most part, a good time in the stands. You know, it was an old-fashioned, good-natured back and forth, but it was just a great atmosphere. I mean, there were times Saturday and again on Sunday night that I thought, this is why LSU should host regionals, because there's no other atmosphere like it. I mean, it would put chills on your skin as both teams, you know, back and forth had big moments in those games. So it was great to be a part of and something that I won't forget.
And I would love, Chris, just to add to that, I would love to see Southern Miss come and play LSU during the regular season, because I think that would have a little juice and those fans would travel. And they would come for a midweek game or even an early season weekend series. I think that would be terrific, just based on the atmosphere that I saw, what Southern Miss brought to the box and how respectful it was between the two programs and the fan bases. So that's something I'd love to see in the future. Let me talk a little bit, ask you about the pitching, because arm soreness has plagued this team all season. It's one of the reasons why they were so inconsistent and up and down. But, man, Landon Marceau and Cole Henry, they looked just top-notch, phenomenal Friday and Saturday. And I think that's the first time that we've seen the starting pitching perform that well Friday, Saturday, and Sunday like it did. I know Walker, you know, gave up some runs there towards the tail end of his start. But the starting pitching was just so good for the Tigers over the weekend, Chris. And I think that was the first time you could say that it was like that way for an entire weekend, maybe all season.
Yeah, it was really one of the better weekends that the guys put together. And, you know, there was a lot of ways made when Coach Bolinari announced that, you know, he was going to go with Landon Marceau in that first game. But, you know, I've been around Coach long enough, especially this year, because he counts on his bullpen so much, and you get into these do-or-die situations in a regional where, you know, you may have to win three or four games. Because of the fact that the bullpen had been so consistent, you want to keep as many arms as you can get. And he said, hey, I'm going with the guy who right now, down the last stretch of the season, has been maybe our most consistent starter and has the ability to go out there and give us maybe 5, 6, 7, who knows, and throw hard and keep Southern Miss off balance. Stony Brook off balance. And obviously that was the case. And, of course, you had the arms that you wanted to have for both Saturday's game to keep you right in the driver's seat, was still some good arms available and a very good start early on there for Eric Walker. So all three guys did a tremendous job. You know, it's the first time since 2017, and again, I bring up that year for a specific reason, that you had a freshman back-to-back starting NCAA tournament play. So hats off to Landon Marceau. Cole Henry looked good. It was great to see him kind of get back to where he was before he had to be put on the shelf. And then again, early on, I thought Eric Walker, very surgeon-like, with his precision throwing the baseball. So they looked good. And then, of course, overall, I thought the bullpen, which has been the most consistent, did their job as well. I don't see much of a difference going into this tough weekend against Florida State either. I mean, I think the plan for Coach Maneri will be the same way. You want to stay in the driver's seat, put the pressure on the visiting team, and make sure you've got good arms and arms that you can rely on to get you through certainly Sunday, and maybe not have to worry about it. But if you do, you've got some good guys remaining on Monday.
We're talking with Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Chris, let's talk about Tuani, Antoine Duplantis, the former Lafayette High star. Just a guy that's so kind of low-key, filled with humility. He ties Eddie Furness's record on Friday. Then Saturday I'm there, and he's 0-for-4. He gets another chance in the ninth, and they intentionally walk him, and that did not go over too well with the people inside Alex Box Stadium. But he breaks the record on Sunday. You know, gives the tip of the cap and everything like that. As someone who's been covering this team for a few years now, what are just your takeaways personally of what Duplantis brings to this team and what kind of young man he is?
Well, first off, the Duplantis family and Lafayette can be extremely proud of the young man, Antoine Duplantis. I mean, he is, I've said it many times, I've probably said it on the show, if you look up student-athlete, you know, they should, he's one of those guys you could put the picture by and say, this is the student-athlete. You know, I've got a 14-year-old son who loves the game of baseball, plays the game of baseball, and, you know, looks up to these guys. And Antoine's one that I don't have to say it often, but when I do, I usually say that's the kind of guy you want to handle your business that way on and off the field. And it was interesting because Doug Thompson, you know, mentioned when he tied the record on Friday that, you know, there's a lot of similarities between the former Eddie Furness, we like to call him Dr. Eddie Furness now, and Antoine Duplantis. He's the ultimate teammate, as Doug said. You know he's going to give you what you need, and when called upon, he's going to deliver more times than not only at the plate, but certainly in the field. Kind of leads by example and lets his work do the talking. And is a great student athlete, and as I said, great teammate, and just a great human being. So for me to watch him over the last 4 years, and what a story in the weekend alone. I mean, you tie it up on Friday, you come in on Saturday, everybody's there, the place is packed. Everybody in the lineup for LSU gets a hit, and five of the Tigers get multiple hits, and the only guy to go hitless is Antoine Duplantis. But he told Doug before the game that if he had his way, he'd much rather do it in the game where they captured the regional. And again, maybe that was his plan all along. But he did come in on Sunday in the first at bat, which in and of itself was the most at bats, you know, by an LSU Tiger. 267th at bat, and he puts one right into center field to get hit number 353. So it was a great story, a great guy, and very proud of it.
We're talking with Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Chris, let's talk a little bit about the Major League Baseball draft. Four current players on the roster have been drafted so far in the first two rounds. Four signees have been drafted as well. And we talked about it earlier on the show, the Christian Cairo situation. You know, they told Major League Baseball clubs that he was going to need so much money. He wasn't drafted in the first two rounds. He's at LSU. He's meeting with Paul Maneri. His mom cries in the middle of the weight room. They're scheduling their classes. They get a phone call, and the big league ball club overpays in the slot for the signing bonus, and now the young man is gone. Now, I understand this is a business, but why can't Major League Baseball just hold its draft until after the College World Series? College football doesn't have to deal with this. College basketball doesn't have to deal with this. Why are we still doing this like this with baseball?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, and I love the game of baseball. I love Major League Baseball, but let's face it, it's a sport that, you know, has waned in the last 15 to 20 years simply because it is a traditional sport. And I liken Major League Baseball to the NCAA. They are slow to change, and they're slow to realize the conditions around them and the day in which we live in. And, you know, some of that I get. You know, there is part of it You don't want to see the game change too much, but this doesn't impact the game on the diamond. This is more on the business side. So I agree with you. I think it, you know, obviously, you know, it's kind of, for me, the Major League Baseball saying, look, I know you guys are playing your college baseball thing, and you're playing a tournament, and whatever. But, you know, we've got business to take care of, and we got to get it done as soon as possible. So I think it's a little tone deaf by Major League Baseball, but again, I think it's got more to do with the fact that they just don't change a lot of things that they do, regardless of what's going on around them. Now, they have in some aspects over the last couple of years because they saw the numbers start to dwindle. So I agree with you. It's just one of those things. And, you know, I was talking to somebody in Fargo, North Dakota yesterday, on a radio show, and they talked about, you know, early on what the draft looked like for LSU. And my answer was, I mean, that's just kind of what you deal with here. It never makes it easier. And I know it's frustrating for Coach Maneri and Nolan Kane, a recruiting coordinator, but that's just life here. I mean, they got to deal with it each and every season. The one thing that stands out to me, and again, that story, you can't slight somebody for, you know, again, life-changing money. Not only for that young man, but obviously possibly his family. I don't know the whole situation, but I mean, again, it's, you know, put yourself in those shoes and somebody gives you a phone call and says, would you like to become a millionaire? You know, I think most people would say, oh yeah, that sounds good. So I get that. But overall, I mean, you kind of expected the guys who are currently on the team and you were hoping that they would get drafted. So I'm happy for those guys. They put in a lot of work and they certainly deserve it. For the signees, you know, last year LSU won the draft in such a big way, especially from a pitching staff perspective, that, you know, you don't want to see this happen every year, and you'd love for last season to kind of replay itself more times than not. But the good news for LSU and the good news for Tiger fans, the good news for the staff is, you know, a couple of guys that are going to come here, obviously Hampton and Doty. That's big news, because you're getting some guys who can impact at the plate and in the field. And I think the pitching staff that you were able to get stay away from the Major League draft a year ago, you certainly want to take guys that you can get. But I think LSU is going to be in a good position for the next couple of years because of last year's good fortune. So, I kind of look at it as there's some hits they took yesterday and the day before. And then there's some gains that they have, and based on who they have coming back, especially from the pitching perspective, everybody stays healthy, knock on wood, and everybody progresses. I don't think that the 2019 draft is going to take such a hit, big hit, to the program overall. So they may not have won it like they did a year ago, but I don't think they got devastated by it.
Chris, appreciate you coming on, making time for us as always. I know it's a busy week for you. Enjoy calling a Super Regionals this weekend inside Alex Box, brother.
Yeah, if you love college baseball, I was asked yesterday, what would you say to fans? I don't think LSU fans who were there this past weekend are going to have any trouble or any lack of motivation to be out at the ballpark because of the storylines that are going to be there. And two good teams, C.J. Van Eyck, solid pitcher. He mowed down Georgia on Saturday night in Athens. Got a guy named Mendoza that's got plenty of power. He's playing his best right now, which is what you want it to do. And, of course, Florida State's going to be fighting for Mike Martin in his 40th year to try to get him back to Omaha for a chance to win a title. And, of course, LSU knows what it's at stake. But the atmosphere, if you love college baseball or the game of baseball, and you didn't get a chance to take it in last weekend, I invite you to do so because it's going to be a great atmosphere, a fun atmosphere, and my guess is we're going to see some pretty good baseball by some really top-level caliber student-athletes.
Chris, appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much.
All right, gentlemen, have a good rest of the week.
That's the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour number two right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Little news that we weren't able to get to yesterday because it happened in the afternoon. UL's Director of Athletics, Brian Maggard, will serve as the chair of the Sun Belt Conference's Athletic Directors Council for the next 2 years. It was announced yesterday. It's a two-year commitment that allows Maggard the opportunity to work closely with the newly arrived Sun Belt Commissioner, Keith Gill. You can read more about Brian Maggard serving in this role on the 103.7 The Game website. Make sure to go check that out. We have a story up there for you to look at. Hour two's in the books coming up. Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South talking all things SEC football with us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He's a friend of the program. He's a featured senior columnist for both Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com. He's also co-host of the Saturday Down South podcast. It's the one and only Connor O'Gara. Connor, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. Can't complain. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, doing great. Just when I think we have nothing to talk to you about because we're going into a lull for college football says not so fast, and we have to bring you back on, my friend.
Yeah, why would, first of all, I mean, it's June. Yeah, it's a slow time of year, but like this the SEC, it's the conference that never sleeps.
It does feel that way. Let's start with the SEC, Connor. This is the first time in more than a decade that we do not have a single new first year head coach in the Southeastern Conference for football. A, are you surprised by that? That we actually have some carryover from a year before, and who do you think entering the season is possibly on the hot seat in the SEC?
Yeah, I think that, you know, and I've written about this for SDS and just kind of the last time this happened. I mean, let's think back to 2006 and what ensued afterwards, and it's this run of dominance. And it's like, you know, that quiet offseason, which is so rare in the SEC, It was followed up by what, five national championships in 5 years? I mean, to go on a run like that said that, you know, a lot of teams are kind of happy where they're at, and a lot of the big time powers are happy where they're at. And after we had such a wild offseason following the 2017 season, you know, we kind of knew coming into the year that it was most likely going to be quiet. But I mean, it really is amazing that in this day and age with the money that's at stake that we had an offseason like this. So I think it's a good sign for the conference. And you know, what if history does repeat itself? You know, we're looking at places like Georgia and Texas A&M where we've always talked about them as these sleeping giants. Well, now they have their guys. They have their guys at head coach and guys that we think can be in the national title hunt moving forward. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the SEC did rattle off another one of these impressive runs where you see maybe three different schools in a five-year stretch win a national championship. As far as who the coaches are that are on the hot seat, you know, yesterday, I always find these interesting because I don't like getting involved in the hot seat conversation very much in the off season, but I do take in, you know, the odds and what people are saying. And, you know, I saw some odds that were floating my way from My Top Sports, and, you know, the first coach to be fired, the odds on favorite is Clay Helton at USC, and his odds are 6-1. And then further down the list, you'd have to go all the way to 18-1 odds that Gus Malzahn has to be the first coach fired in 2019. So, yeah, I mean, I would tend to think that somebody like Gus would have the best chance. Somebody at a major program would have the best chance of being the first coach fired in the middle of the season. Think back 2 years ago or 3 years ago now to that 2016 game against with Auburn and LSU, where it was kind of the fire bowl between Les and Gus, and you have that play, that touchdown that LSU scored that got called back because they snapped the ball after, you know, the final second had ticked off. And you know, what if Auburn had lost that game? Gus Malzahn still in his current job? I don't know. And I would tend to think that something like that is possible if he does get off to a rough start. You know, he's got a really tough start to the season, as always, and having that Oregon game, you just never know. So I would tend to think that if I was betting on someone, I'd like the 18-1 odds with Gus.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara here of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com. Connor, why has it been such a tumultuous experience with Gus and Auburn or and the Auburn supporters. They've had a great amount of success. I know they've lived down, haven't lived up to expectations, but they have played for a national championship. I know Nick Saban in Alabama looms large in the state of Alabama. I'm from Alabama. I'm from Mobile. I understand that dynamic. But it's never seemed to be a relationship with Malzahn and the university that's been in harmony ever since it began. Why is that?
I think, you know, in Gus's defense, and he's made plenty of mistakes since he's been at that position, and some can point to the stubbornness of 2018 and not deviating from his system when he had a quarterback who obviously wasn't fit to run that offense the way that he wanted. I think Auburn is the weirdest Power 5 job in the country, and I've said that before, and I just think that the expectations that come when you have a place like Alabama that's in-state, and when you've had some of the seasons that they've had where they've raised these expectations so high, but the expectation for a lot of fans is to sustain that level, and they say, why can't we be what Alabama is? We look over and we see Georgia doing what it's doing now. Why can't we be what Georgia is on a yearly basis? And I just think it's kind of speaks to the nature of college football where it's just tougher. And for whatever reason, like Auburn, when it wins, it's always these crazy, like miraculous out of nowhere seasons. And when they do have expectations going into the end of the year, they're always let down. I mean, there was some stat about what their ranking was in the playoff era about, I think they've in terms of their preseason ranking, finishing better than their preseason ranking. I think they've only done that like once in the playoff era. And, you know, that's just because the talent, you know, it's there. It definitely is. But Gus needs a very, very specific quarterback, I think, to run that offense. And I do think that, you know, part of this is just this weird combination of what's around you and also at the same time the level of success that Auburn has had. And once you've had that taste, you want it every year, and you don't think that your floor should be as low as it's been during the Gus Malzahn era. So it's tough to put your finger on it, but I just chalk it up to being a really bizarre job that's going to be tough for any person to go in and take over that job.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara here of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com. Connor, I want to ask you about a couple other guys. You talked about the interesting college football odds to first coaches to be fired. You talked about Clay Helton at USC, and I know they've been a mess with their administration, their athletic department, and their coaching hires, and it's been miss after miss after miss after miss. Any possible way they decide to, if they do part ways with Clay Helton, because they're still, they're still USC. So
right.
It shouldn't be this hard to get it right. I know they've been obsessed with the Pete Carroll tree or making sure to get a USC guy. Why not, if they part ways with Clay Helton, why not go, hey, let's poach a guy from Alabama or poach a guy from the SEC and get someone from the most dominant conference in college football, or go poach a Clemson assistant and think outside of the box to help reestablish our program, just like we did when we hired Pete Carroll to begin with all those years ago?
That's a good point. And I think that, you know, we tend to, when we look at these coaching candidates, we tend to try and all put them in a box, and we say, oh, if you struggled on defense, you need a coach that's going to come in there and be this defensive mind and you know, take over that way. And we just see these pieces fitting so perfectly, when ultimately it's just going to come down to who the athletic director likes the most. I mean, you can pay $250,000 and hire a search firm, but it's going to come down to who the athletic director, who the administration likes the most. And, you know, it is weird that it has been this in-house thing where, you know, Lane Kiffin is this young offensive coordinator and this great young mind, and ultimately that's what lures him back to USC. And Clay Helton, you know, he's there for the early part of this decade, and he kind of rises his way through the rankings. People forget he was just a position coach there once upon a time. But now, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's part of the problem, is that it is USC, and, you know, he gets off to this great start, and when you set expectations so high, you know, you think that that's just where you're supposed to be on a yearly basis. And having the year that he did, it's kind of amazing that he actually survived it. I mean, if we're being serious, a place like USC where you win five games, you know, there are a lot of places across college football, one of them that we just mentioned, Auburn, where, you know, that just wouldn't fly. I mean, it's point simple. And I think they just want to have their ducks in a row. And, you know, he's only been there for now 3.5 years, I guess you could say, in 2016, you know, getting to that Rose Bowl, winning that Rose Bowl. But, yeah, I really don't know if there's a set candidate. And I wouldn't mind seeing him go outside the box. I don't think that there is, you know, this belief that you need to get a USC guy or something like that that's going to be talked about so much. For whatever reason, we obsess over that, probably just because it's like Michigan. You have all these great alumni, and you can think of all these great different coaches, and you're like, oh, you got to get a Michigan man. But it's like, you know, you just need a guy that can win football games. That's what it's going to come down to. Yeah, it helps if they have the connection in California. They can recruit on the West Coast, but like, it's a pretty talent heavy area. And if you get a guy that, you know, you just think he's going to be the right fit, then you go after and get him. I don't even know what that candidate list looks like right now, but you know, it's interesting they're giving him one more year, and we'll just kind of see how it goes.
We're on with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, I want to get your thoughts on the SEC deciding on the final day of the spring meetings there in Destin, Florida, that they will, in fact, lift their ban on alcohol sales inside stadiums. They're going to leave it to the discretion of each school. There are some parameters there, how long they can sell it during certain events, and that they can only sell beer and wine. Your thoughts, why did it take this long? And secondly, LSU is going to be the first to jump all over this, right?
Well, I would assume so. I mean, my initial reaction to this, I hearken back to a quote from Angels in the Outfield where the announcer says, you know, all I have to say is it's about time. And to me, it's long overdue because this was the last Power 5 conference to have this ban of not allowing schools to be able to make the decision. And this has been such a fast-growing thing, especially in the playoff era, where schools now are seeing this proof of concept. You're seeing, you know, a place like West Virginia was the first school to come out and do this, and they've been doing it for a while, and they've reported that incidents have gone down since introducing alcohol in the stadium. And I think that on the surface, you know, conferences like the SEC and places that have these great game day atmospheres, they would say, okay, how is more alcohol going to equal less problems? But, you know, if you kind of actually dig a little deeper and you think about, okay, you're de-incentivizing binge drinking before games, and now you're not going to totally stop the person that wants to come into the stadium with a flask or a water bottle of vodka, whatever it is, and be a drunken idiot and ruin somebody else's day. That's never going to go away, in my opinion, but you're at least de-incentivizing it by saying, hey, like, we got some options here. Like, you can have some beer, you can have some wine, whatever floats your boat in the stadium. And if you're rolling in a seven-figure payday for doing this, you know, Texas made like $3.5 million by doing this last year. It kind of makes a lot of sense. And if, you know, you're going about it in the right way with all the training and making sure that, you know, it's only cups, it's not cans, and you're really kind of going through all of the necessary protocol to make sure that this is, you know, something that isn't going to completely ruin the in-game experience and maybe even add to it, then it makes sense. Let's not forget that college football attendance is down right now. SEC attendance last year was at its lowest since 2003. Athletic directors, universities, they're looking for something to say, hey, we want to improve our in-game atmosphere. We want to make this more like you sitting on your couch at home, where you can go to your fridge that's 10 feet away and get a beer and enjoy a game. And I think that right now doing something like this, it kind of makes sense with the times. And, you know, if this doesn't work and there are a lot more incidences than what's been reported, then there's nothing that says you have to do it. And schools can say, hey, no, we want to take this off the table. We want to go back to the way that things were. But I'm glad that we've finally gotten to the point where we can at least put schools in charge of making this decision.
Talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, a lot of buzz last week when CBS made its announcement. You know, it said, you know, it always picks its two doubleheaders. That's only been a thing since 2011. That they've had two doubleheaders every season. Traditionally, they're always the 2:30 kick Central Time. That's how it's always been. They added the doubleheaders in 2011, and they've always been, Alabama's been one of those doubleheaders, their matchup with LSU, ever since the game of the century there in Tuscaloosa. They decide not to do it, and reaction was, oh, well, maybe the LSU-Alabama rivalry's lost a little edge. But when you dig a little deeper and you look at the schedule of other games involving SEC teams for that day, it's like hot garbage. Is it just a simple fact that there wasn't two games good enough to do a doubleheader, so they just didn't do it that way? Or is it something with the LSU-Alabama rivalry losing a little bit of its juice?
The cynical side of me wonders if – I wonder if LSU had a little something to do with this. The more I think about it, just to say we need to mix something up, you know, because it's the same thing every year. It's the biggest game on LSU's schedule, and they get this great buildup, and I'm sure that – you know, I'm sure the tailgate is unbelievable. And last year, you know, you're watching College Game Day and Coach O's getting everybody fired up. You're like, oh, yeah, this is great. And there's just such a big letdown. And I'm not saying that LSU is, like, getting out ahead of this and saying we just don't want our fans to be quite as disappointed with this. And I know that LSU fans are going to have a good time regardless. They're going to have a good time win, lose, or draw. But maybe they're just doing something to say, like, hey, let's get this thing changed up a little bit, because it's not really going our way right now the way that the current setup plays out. And, you know, maybe there is a little bit something there. And I don't think it's as simple as, oh, you know, LSU, Alabama is losing a cluster. I know Paul Feinbaum came out and said that. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think that there are still a lot of regional, a lot of national interest in the rivalry. I think it's still a great game to watch, and I think you still get fired up to see it. But, yeah, I mean, maybe there is a little bit of incentive for LSU to say, yeah, let's just see if we can do something different and see if that this can better our situation, because it's just not working for them right now.
Well, I'm with Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, SaturdayTradition.com, right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, a couple more questions. I want to stick in the SEC East. Yeah, you wrote, you had an article recently posted, is Florida an SEC East contender? You say, obviously, but there's something that I feel like too many people are overlooking. Would you like to dive in on what that is?
The thing that people are overlooking about Florida is that I went 3-3 against the SEC East last year. They lost all three of those games by double digits. They played none of those three games were true road games. So if you're thinking about a team, and by the way, they were minus 11 in division play. Five of their six games that they played against division opponents, they were trailing in the fourth quarter. And I still, like, in the back of my mind, I remember watching that Vandy game. Keyshawn Vaughn goes down, and that game totally changed after that moment. And, like, I just kind of wonder, you know, winning the East is not what it used to be. It's not what it used to be 3 years ago. Georgia's at such a different level right now. Georgia's been perfect against the East the last 2 years. They haven't lost a divisional game by less than 14 points. Going 6-2 and beating Georgia isn't even going to be good enough to win the division now. And I just think that Florida, the thing that we've overlooked, because we've looked at this on the surface, right? I mean, we look at the fact that they went from 4 wins to 10. They win a New Year's Six Bowl. They finished number 7 in the country. Everybody's feeling good. Florida's back. But you got to take care of business in your own division if you're going to be, you know, putting yourself in position to go to a playoff game. And right now, Florida, the consistency just lacked. And they did some McElwain-like things with playing down to their competition last year. I mean, let's not forget how bad they were against Mizzou at home, where they just got smoked. Felipe Franks got benched that game. And let's not dismiss the fact that, like, Kyle Trask came in, and who knows what happens if Kyle Trask doesn't go down with a season-ending injury in practice during that following week, and where Florida is sitting at right now, especially with his quarterback situation. So I just tend to think, like, don't get me wrong, I'm high in Florida. Florida fans should be excited. When you go from 4 wins to 10 and have the season that they did, you should feel good. But just don't overlook the teams in the division, because Kentucky has outplayed Florida the last 2 years. Mizzou has outscored Florida the last 2 years by a score of 83-33. And here we're talking about Florida just having this single focus on Georgia. It's not just about Georgia. It's about the rest of the division. If Florida's not careful, they're not going to progress in the way that they think that they can, because I think that there's still a significant step below Georgia and what the Bulldogs have been able to do in division play.
Connor, we'll wrap it up with this one final question. This got tweeted out on Tuesday morning, right before we went off the air. You're speaking about Felipe Franks. There's a quote with his jersey, a picture of him high-fiving fans, stating, quote, Florida is hanging 50-plus points on everybody this season. I'll see to it personally. Your thoughts?
You know, as we were talking about off air, you know, I think Felipe is just doing his inner Spurrier. You know, he's just talking about hanging half 100. What's wrong with that? Like, that's the Florida way, as far as I'm concerned.
Should a guy that was benched last year be talking about personally dropping 50 points on teams?
You know, that's the thing that we've kind of always heard about Felipe, and, you know, talking with people that are close to the program and people who have been in that locker room to see the way that he operates is that, you know, it's going good with Felipe, and he can get very confident. There's no doubt about it. But when things turn south, you know, we've seen where he's shushing the home fans after scoring a touchdown. It's like, man, you gotta be a little bit thicker, you know, thicker skin than that, because this is just what comes with being a quarterback at a big time program like Florida. And when you have the history of quarterbacks that Florida does, you're in the spotlight 24/7. And when anything you say and do just gets magnified in a way that, you know, you're just not going to be at other schools. And Felipe coming out and saying this, you know, like, based on the way that Mullen has been kind of operating this offseason with this confidence that he's been going about his business with, you know, I don't think Mullen's going to have a problem with it. I think this is definitely something that can, you know, obviously turn against him. And if Georgia remembers something like that, or, you know, even Mizzou, which, goodness, we can't forget about Mizzou shutting down Felipe in the Swamp last year. You know, this is definitely something that can come back to bite him. But, you know, he's feeling good right now. And if you're coming off a season like Florida had, obviously you're going to be feeling good. He played so well in the Peach Bowl. But, Yeah, I mean, maybe if it were me, I'd probably dial it back a little bit for the rest of the offseason. Just, you know, let the 50 burgers do the talking.
Connor, I appreciate you taking some time out for us before you head out on vacation, brother. Enjoy your time, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Yep, appreciate it. Sounds good, guys.
Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com, joining us here on RP3 and Company.
Felipe, oh, no, no,
oh, Felipe.
No.
Oh, giving people bulletin board material in June. My Bro. Man, no good.
What have you won?
No, you nothing. Nothing. You beat out Jack Del Rio's son for a job and then lost it.
Rio.
Not good. Not a good look.
No bueno.
Oh.
See you this season, Felipe.
We got to hit a break, but more RP3 and Company coming up next right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface, so sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every single year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game reminds you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Quick news to get to. This broke yesterday. It's official. Dustin the Diamond Poirier, the King of Lafayette himself, will fight on September 7th. For UFC 242, that's going to be your main event. It's going to be a World Lightweight Championship unification bout versus Khabib. Khabib's the one that beat up on Conor McGregor and then went into the crowd and beat up on some people.
I still don't like that guy.
That will be in Abu Dhabi, UFC 242, Saturday, September 7th. It's official unification bout with Lafayette's own Dustin the Diamond Poirier versus Khabib. That's going to be a busy night, ladies and gentlemen. LSU at Texas. That'll be prime time, so you can watch that or listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. And then check out the UFC 242. So congratulations to Diamond for securing that title bout, unification bout, in September.
That's exactly what he told us. He said he expected September, and now we've got September.
You got the location, got the actual UFC card. They will be the main event. That should be a hell of a fight.
Nurmagomedov is Khabib's last name. Nurmagomedov. We'll work on that, and we'll have it down by September.
I have a few months to deal with the phonics of all that. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, UL recruiting news right here on 103.7 The Game.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana Wrap-Up.
Raymond, it's time for the latest edition of the Louisiana Wrap-Up on this Wednesday edition of RP3 and Company. I'm Cody, your RP3, and we are live in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And if you want to get a visual on the product that is RP3 and Company, you can do that by tuning in to channel 32.1 KXKW, or we're on LUS Fiber 133. Or if you want to check out HD 1133, it's enough of the housekeeping. Let's get directly in to the Louisiana Wrap-Up. The first place we want to start is where we are right now. That would be Acadiana, Lafayette, specifically. Raymond, kick us off on this Louisiana Wrap-Up.
It was announced yesterday that the UL Region Cajuns football team, Billy Napier and his group, have added an experienced defensive back to their roster for the upcoming season by adding Brendan Johnston. He's a safety who spent the last two seasons playing at UT San Antonio. He will join UL as a grad transfer. The young man, of course, posted it on social media. Thanks to everyone who still believes in the kid. Now let's go to work. He spelled go, G-E-A-U-X, of course.
No other way to spell it.
But he's a native of Waco, Texas. He attended Midway High School. He actually signed with the Naval Academy at a high school, but then changed his mind, went to UTSA instead, redshirted, and then played the last 2 years. He's 5'10", 180 pounds, graduated in May. That gives them automatic depth on the back end there of the defense. But here's the other thing that I find extremely amusing, that a local restaurant, fried chicken joint, as we love to refer to it as, actually was part of the recruiting process because he put on Twitter that he discovered the Popeyes all-you-can-eat buffet.
I don't see why that's not one of the major selling points when you recruit.
Dude, he tweeted out, I found a Popeyes chicken buffet. Yes, a buffet. Like, it was that big of a deal. And so, yes, he found the buffet. That might have been closing the deal. I posted on Twitter, that should be a recruiting tool for any business in the entire Acadiana area. But, yes, the UL Raging Cajuns adding depth in the defensive secondary with Brendan Johnson, grad transfer, going to be eligible to play this fall. So, good pickup for the Raging Cajuns.
The trip continues on this Louisiana wrap-up. Let's head over to the West Coast, the Golden Coast. I'm talking about Los Angeles, Raymond. But please, if you will, bring it back to the Boot.
You remember that the Los Angeles Lakers failed miserably trying to secure Anthony Davis after an Anthony Davis and his agent, who are associated with LeBron James, demanded a trade from the Pelicans. Well, that ended up costing Dale Demps' job, and both seasons went into tailspins for both franchises. The rumors coming out now by several sources and several publications, including Forbes magazine.
That's the big money magazine.
That's the big money magazine. Say that Anthony Davis could be going to the Los Angeles Lakers. That they may be the frontrunners, that talks have begun between the Lakers and the Pelicans. Now, we'll dive deeper into this, and if this is actual something that could occur with Les East, our friend from CrescentCitySports.com, tomorrow on tomorrow's show. But I find that interesting because I've mentioned it before. David Griffin, the new head man in charge for the Pels, loves Brandon Ingram.
Matt.
Has since he came out of Duke. I've said it before. I know we knocked the proposal and we look at those Lakers players and we say that they're a bunch of scrubs and they're not worth the value and everything like this. But if you can get the fourth overall pick, get a future first round pick, and get three players, that's a damn good deal. And we've seen what's happened with other Lakers. Remember when we were told by Magic Johnson and Mitch Kupchak and all those guys that D'Angelo Russell was garbage?
Shame on you for believing Magic Johnson.
D'Angelo Russell goes, becomes an all-star for the Brooklyn Nets. An all-star. We saw how good Julius Randle was for the Pels last year as a double-double machine. They discarded him. They're like, well, he's not good enough. Maybe the Lakers don't know what the hell they're doing, and they don't know how to develop and evaluate their young talent. Seeing what D'Angelo Russell and seeing what Julius Randle have done since leaving the Lakers and how much better they've become with different coaches and different front offices and different teams, I would be more optimistic about trading with the Lakers now and getting what you can out of them, especially if you can get this year's number four pick and a first-round pick next year. I think that would be a slam dunk for the Pels.
Best-case scenario, though, in my opinion, just because I'm a fanboy, he stays, and the Pelicans do big things, but not likely.
I don't think that's
not likely. As we continue our trip on this Louisiana wrap-up, I'm going to make us have a hard U-turn here, and I want to come all the way back to right where we started, the heart of Acadiana, Lafayette, Louisiana. What do you got for me now?
That is quite the U-turn, my friend.
I never said it was going to be an efficient trip.
Look, the Acadiana Cane Cutters, they've struggled to start the year. That's our local team in the Texas Collegiate League. We had the skipper on himself, Ricky Van Asselberg, on the show a few weeks ago on Memorial Day. And, look, it's tough because a lot of these teams start off the season slow because they're still getting players in. Tremont Spears, UL Raging Cajun, he's on the King Cutters roster as well. It's a difficult job to take on, but they've struggled to start the season. But last night, the King Cutters got their first win of the season.
They're here.
That's right, with a 9-3 victory over the Texarkana Twins. The King Cutters will be looking for the sweep in the series against the Texarkana Twins tonight. So congratulations to the skipper, Ricky Van Alsenberg, as well as all of the Acadiana Cade Cutters for getting the first win of this season in the Texas Collegiate League. So congrats to them out there at Fallbacher Field.
It's nice. They got to get another game tonight at Fallbacher Field, taking on the Twins again.
That's correct.
All their series are little two-game series. It helps with the travel and stuff. So yes. Looking for a quick two-game sweep of the Twins tonight, 7 o'clock at Fallbacher Field. We got another stop to make on the Louisiana wrap-up. We don't go here often, but when we do, we usually talk Demons. We're in Natchitoches, Ray. What you got? I guess sometimes we talk Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame there, too.
We will be on Friday, as I'll be broadcasting live from Natchitoches for the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame weekend. Yesterday, the New York Mets. The Mets? Did I say the Mets?
The Mets.
The Mets?
The New York Mets. I want to make an entire like league now of like the Chicago Cubs and the New York Mets. And like, oh, I can do this. Hold on. Wait till next week.
They're so terrible. I envision the Mets playing with oven mitts.
The amazing mitts.
Nice. The New York Mets selected right-handed pitcher Nathan Jones in the fifth round of the Major League Baseball draft. It hasn't set in yet, the product of Shreveport's Loyola College Prep said, a half hour after being drafted. He's a star for the Northwestern State Demons. So congratulations to that. Is the 148th overall selection. He became the highest drafted Demon since Minnesota Twins tabbed Mason Milotic in the second round.
Milotic is a Pokemon.
There we go. He's a Pokemon. They selected a Pokemon in the second round of the 2012 draft. Jones also becomes the first Southland Conference player chosen in this year's draft and gave NSU Demons a second straight season with a top 7-round pick as Milwaukee chose David Fry in the 7th round in the 2018 draft. So congratulations to him. Jones was a second-team All-Southland Conference selection as a senior. He posted a career-best 7 wins, going 7-4 overall with an ERA of under 3. He also struck out 80 batters in 81 innings. So congratulations to the Northwestern State Demon and Shreveport product getting drafted in the 5th round by the New York Metropolitan Mittholders.
Awesome. Raymond, can I add one more stop to Louisiana wrap-up?
By all means, brother.
Yes.
We're crisscrossing the state.
Well, we're going to stay in the state here, but I want to go down to the Crescent City. I want to head to New Orleans. I think technically maybe Metairie because we are at Tulane's Turchin Stadium. That is in Metairie, right? It's not in New Orleans technically. I think it's in Metairie. But we're at Turchin Stadium for last night's black and gold celebrity softball game, Raymond. I have to give you some of these highlights. You're going to love it. It was the offense taking on the defense as it normally is. And, of course, all the proceeds for this game and the crowd. You can see videos online. There's a big crowd at this game, which is not that surprising. But all the proceeds go to the Steve Gleason Foundation. So Steve Gleason was there himself, nice. And they took a big team photo after the game. And he was in the middle, Steve Gleason. I believe he has a son. He was there as well. So all this goes for a great cause. But it got cranked off last night. 22-21 was the final score
of
the game.
That was a softball game?
It's a slow pitch softball game, right? With grown, very professional athletes as grown men.
Big, huge, 250-pound, 6'4" men.
The final score, 22-21. You think the defense or the offense won?
Defense, baby.
The defense did win.
Yes.
The defense would get the win in a 7-inning game. Michael Thomas had an impressive game, they said. He turned an incredible double play, but then also in the last inning, he hit a pop-up and tried to tackle whoever was making the catch, and it ended up not working, and the umpires called a double play on him, and it's quite funny. There was a home run derby as well, and that was won by, I won't even make you guess because it's kind of unfair, Saints long snapper Zach Wood brought home the home run derby championship for the second year in a row. So your boy Zach Wood can swing a bat.
Oh, Woody. I mean, he's
a good point.
He's a phenomenal athlete.
He beat DeMario Davis in the finals of that home run
derby. DeMario Davis was the captain of the defensive team.
Oh, well, there you go. So the defensive team captain made it. Where does would fall. Is he on the defensive team? I guess. There's no special teams team. Who's he play for?
The long snapper may be the last guy picked.
Right.
Just saying.
Well, and here you would think maybe in like a home run competition or something, kickers wouldn't get that much love. Will Lutz finishing in third place in the home run derby. So shout out to the kicker Will Lutz for getting in there. Former track star for LSU Cyril Grayson and Jared Cook were throwing a football in between the game. They were just out on the field throwing a football while everyone was playing softball.
Blast, oh, and they probably met with fans and everything.
There was autograph signings galore.
I love that.
Go check out the video if you find it online. It looked adorable. Saints rookie Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was out on the field just holding his baby. He was like, I'm just going to be with my baby. You guys do what you want to do. I play in the NFL now. I'm going to hold my baby. Like, it just looks like a whole lot of fun. Oh, and probably the best part, and this will be the last thing I bring up. If you want to see more, go look online. It's everywhere. But Cam Jordan did a race around the bases against a panda. Whatever it's worth. Take that for what it is. That's how it happened. It was somebody in a panda suit running around the bases while being chased by Cam Jordan. And then whoever it was also throwing water balloons at Cam Jordan while he was running around the bases.
How great would that be if that's actually Mark Ingram in disguise?
Oh, that would be the best. Your boy still found a way into the black and gold softball game. Another funny thing that happened too, Ted Ginn was heard all game talking about how he's the fastest dude on the team.
Yes.
And he ain't getting out. So he was bunting and things in a slow pitch softball game to prove that he was so fast. Well, he hit a little infield grounder that he thought he beat out to first base. The umpires there, which I'm sure they donated their stuff all back to charity right. as well. The umpires called him out at first base. And a quote you could hear throughout the stands, Ted Ginn saying, "That's bull," censored for radio, as he walked off of the field and everyone laughed at him. So Ted Ginn, taking it quite seriously yesterday, want you to know he's still the fastest dude on the team.
And just to let you know that those younger guys that are on the team, like Kirkwood and Traquan Smith, they're just not going to be given Ted Ginn's job. I guarantee you, that's a competitive cat.
Yeah, you're not.
And I love to see that from the veteran player like that. He's getting fired up about a slow pitch charity softball game.
There were also, look at that. They also included fun dance breaks throughout the game. They played stand up and get crunk, and of course, choppa style.
Outstanding. Good and for the Saints Cam for putting Jordan, that on, and all the players because it does go to a good cause for Team Gleason. So
USA fanny pack, a American flag fanny pack. Cam Jordan, you are my hero. He's got, like, Saved by the Bell shorts on, an American fanny pack, and, like, an OSO headband. He's – Cam Jordan might be my dad.
I have questions about what is in your dad's fanny pack.
Wouldn't you like to know, Raymond?
Could be interesting. Oh, that's going to do it. Right now, we got to come back, finish it off, this great hump day edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. It's been a tremendous show. I want to thank our guest, Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers, for coming on, joining us, talking LSU baseball. Also, thanks to Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South, giving us all the great insight about SEC football, head coaches, TV schedules, the alcohol policy, and much more. Connor always delivers the goods. We got a great show lined up for you tomorrow. We'll have Scott Rabelais on from the Baton Rouge Advocate to help us preview the LSU-FSU Super Regional. Also talk probably a little Major League Baseball draft with him. We'll talk with Les East of Crescent City Sports. He'll give us an update from Saints OTAs as well as the Pelicans' Anthony Davis trade situation. We'll have James Yasko, our friend from the Lima Time Time podcast, all things Astros. And our good friend John Marques from the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com will be joining us. Plus, we'll be updating you throughout the day today right here on 103.7 The Game as well as on 103.7thegame.com with updates on LSU and UL draft picks with the Major League Baseball draft, so make sure to tune in constantly throughout the day for that. Programming reminder, the Jordy Holberg Show with our good friend Uncle Jordy will be on from 2 to 4. Ben Love will be on then from 4 to 6 for Bumper to Bumper Sports. He'll hand it over to Five Guys Stories and Lies from 6 to 8 o'clock. And then Astro Launch at 8:30. And then Astros at Seattle Mariners, Game 3 of that series, first pitch 9:10. That will be all right here on 103.7 The Game. Cody Schutz, we gave the people a poll question yesterday. Tell me what it was and what our results are. Let the people know.
We asked who deserves to be in the College Football Hall of Fame more. Your choices were Glenn Dorsey, Kevin Faulk, or Morton Anderson. And in a landslide victory, Kevin Faulk bringing in 71% of the vote. We had a response there from at Treg Murphy. He says that he guarantees it that either you or myself would have had the privilege to watch Kevin Faulk live, then he would have been our choice over Dorsey or Anderson. So,
who said that?
At Treg Murphy.
My brother-in-law's told me the same thing.
Yeah,
the generation, the guys just a little bit older than me, around 45 to 55.
I only know Kevin Faulk from the NFL.
That's the only time I know him. I didn't get to see him during that era of LSU football.
Right.
But you talk to guys who did. John Marques will probably be one tomorrow. They'll tell you that he may have been the best LSU player they've ever seen.
I mean, that's what Treg says. He guarantees that if we would have been able to watch him live, we would think a little differently. So that's a fair statement. Speaking of James Yasko, he said he's coming on the show tomorrow. A little fun with him yesterday on Facebook. He posted, name one musician that you are 100% certain that you could beat in a fight. He started, he said, Jason Mraz. I went with Engelbert Humperdinck. His name and face always bothered me, and he's an old man, so I'm pretty sure I can win. He said 100% sure you could beat in a fight. I'm 100% sure I could beat that 80-something-year-old man in a fight.
I mean, I don't know if I could pare that down to just one guy.
I saw some responses for somebody said Willie Nelson, and James commented on their comment and was like, I strongly urge you to reconsider. He has spent 65 years hanging out in bar rooms.
It's a good point. Oh, that's nice.
You don't have to answer today. Just know that tomorrow.
I'm going to study on it because tomorrow, I think I can compile all this.
Tomorrow, if that comes up, I think he would appreciate knowing what musicians you are 100% certain you could beat up.
I'm not the toughest guy, but I can scrap a little bit.
Think you could take Nick Jonas? Think you got him?
If I can do an old school wrestling move, like just sit on someone like King Kong Bundy would do,
right,
I can use my weight to my advantage.
Smart. So Justin Bieber taking him down.
Oh, that's easy.
I forget who it was. Oh, somebody said.
I will just distract Bieber with a tweet. He'll be too focused looking at his phone.
Somebody said something about, Toby Keith. And Yasko was like, got to remember, though, he's packing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is. And he's a big fella, too. Don't forget that. Terrific show. Cody Schutz, thanks as always, brother. Dan Patrick is up next. You're listening to 103.7 The Game.